Hello, everyone. This is Rob Golfy with RE/MAX, the Golfy team. Welcome to the Golfy Real Estate Show, Niagara Edition, with host Tim Dennis.
And if you've never been with us before, it's an hour where we go through what's going on in the real estate business in Rob's life. You get some questions answered. You get some questions answered you didn't even know you had. So we've got all of that to get to, but we usually start off the program with a look into the real estate week of the host of the program, Rob Golfy. So talk to me about what's happened in the last 7 days.
Oh boy, I've been busy going to seminars and putting on seminars and just learning. So we put on an event every probably 3 to 4 months, let's say every 4 or 5 months, 3 times a year. And we call it Win in Any Market. So we promote agents to come out and listen. We bring some speakers in, and it's just basically how to win in any market, because you know we've had a lot of changing markets in the past 2-3 years. So we had 250 people at, you know, remember the Beacon? I think they call it the Ramada now, mm-hmm. The Beacon off the highway there.
Yep.
In Jordan.
Yep.
So they cleaned up the banquet hall downstairs. It looks all great, and
great view. It's been a fabulous view.
Gorgeous view. And we were trying to find a place that we can hold over 200 people at a winery that's near, not too far from the highway. And there is nobody that holds that kind of people. The closest one was on Mud Street in Lincoln, way up in West Lincoln, and it was just too far off the beaten path. So the next best place was okay. Let's do the old Beacon, and we had 250 people show up. And you know what? It was a great response, and a lot of realtors were very happy to be there. And we were teaching, you know, focus on what we show as other agents what to do, and why are we doing this? You know what? This is us giving back. You know, we're showing them how to build relationships with potential clients. You know, show our expertise and experience, and provide, you know, show them how to provide excellent service for our clients, and you know how we use effective marketing strategies to get more business. You know, stay up to date with the latest market trends and developments. You know, and just incentives to attract clients, and how to be proactive in seeking new business, and continuously work in improving our skills. So we're always training. We're always going to seminars. The one thing I learned a lot when I was in my 20s is that, back then we used to call it tapes, books, and functions. You got to listen to tapes, you got to read books, and you got to go to functions. Now I call it podcasts, books, and functions.
Because, yeah, I was going to say, what is a tape? What is this tape you speak of?
The cassette tape, I remember those. Lots of cassette tapes flying in the backseat. But the key thing to be successful is you got to always educate and learn and be progressive. If you're not, if you're just, you know, just going through the flow, you will have, like, life will blow by you, and you'll go, what happened to my business? What's going on? So we're very proactive. We're always ahead of the curve, and we try to, you know, help other agents become head of the curve also. So that was our thing, and we call it Win in Any Market, which is a pretty good thing, is how to win in any market trends that are happening.
Well,
in
you know,
estate.
It's interesting because I see more, to be honest, I see more and more people imitating what you do on a regular basis, and that's got to be... it's got to be flattering, but you've got business to contend with in terms of competition. But the more people out there that are imitating what you do, the more flattered you must be.
It is. You like it, but you don't like it. Competition is good. We hate it, but we need it. That's what keeps us sharp. And that's what keeps you progressing. That's what keeps you ahead and striving forward. Now, if you don't like competition and you just want the competition to go by you, let them go by you. But you'd be amazed. Now, the business today is totally different than it was 25 years ago. I remember when I started 25 years ago, you know, everybody met with everybody. There was no social media. There was no, basically, you had a cell phone and a pager in one hand, a cell phone in the other, and I had a pom pilot. So I had three like devices I was carrying around with me. It was like I was like a police officer. I had them all around my belt. But that was those days. Eventually, as time went on, all those, the cell phone, the pager, and the Palm Pilot came into one unit, which now was the BlackBerry now, or the iPhone now. But back those days, the advertising was only in print. You only talked to people by phone or in person, and everything was totally different. I think back those days, it was hard, but it was easier. Now, guy like my generation, I had to adapt to what is going on with the technology age today. So I got to compete against these young guys that, you know, grew up with cell phones, you know, talking and twitting and TikToking and all that kind of stuff. I have to adapt to that. If I don't, I will fall by the wayside. So we're always up to date on the latest technology. And you won't see too many guys, you know, in late 40s or early 50s doing as much of this. And you know, and it's like, you know, it's I'm very self-conscious of it too. Like, it's hard. Like, it took a while for me to get used to it. And we just keep putting it out there. If people don't like it, they don't like it. If people like it, they like it. I mean, you know, the older you get, you don't care what, you know, people think of you anymore. And when you're younger, when you're in your 20s, you think you care about everybody what they think of you. So I guess it's just a maturity thing that as you get older, you get better at it.
So you had your own event, but you also went to one in Toronto this past week, right?
So yes, I went to it was called a Buzz Conference, and it's where you know a lot of professional leaders and influencers and innovators and disruptors, people in the industry, they come and speak. We had a powerful speaker from Montreal. She's huge on TikTok. We had people from California, a lady that is on the buying Beverly Hills. She was there. Another guy from New York City was there. So there was a lot of great speakers, a lot of great information. And I'll tell you, every time I go to one of these things, and I used to be a junkie on this, and COVID kind of, like, you kind of got comfortable not going to these things. Now I'm back in the groove of going back to seminars and functions and all that kind of stuff. And I learn all the time. The only way you are going to excel and exceed and progress, in no matter what business you are, you have to go to functions and learn. And this was a great conference, the Buzz Conference. A lot of people I haven't seen in years. I saw them there. There was about, I think there was about 700 people there, which was good. Mostly Toronto people. Again, not too many people from Niagara or even Hamilton were there. So kudos to me for learning more than them. You know what I mean?
There
so
you go.
Yeah,
that's how you stay ahead of the curve, right?
Yeah, they're obviously not interested in progressing in this business.
So let's talk about March. Well, we've come to the end of March, believe it or not, how quickly this year is flying. And where are we in terms of the sale price of homes? Because you get conflicting stories if you listen to the news headlines. So where are we legitimately?
So in March, sales in March were up, but the average sale price came down from February. So you know, remember how I say February, get your house on the market?
Yep.
Well, I showed you here. Look in Niagara. In January, the average sale price in January in all of Niagara was $586,000. Okay, that was the month of January. February was a great month. The average sale price was $634,000. Sorry, no, these are medium prices.
Yep.
I apologize. These are the benchmark price, $634,000. And in March, it dropped to $625,000. See that? I knew there was going to be a spike, and that's and I always say, like, it starts usually in February. You are in the safe zone if you put your house up for sale in February. So what happened was the last week of January we had it started picking up real quick, and usually at the end of the month it started picking up. We noticed the market was leading, and it proved it in February. But look at what happened in March. It dropped. The spike, it spiked down. We're going to see this throughout the entire year. We're going to see ups and downs. But it's just going to float around. It's just not going to be, you know, it's going to be 2%, 3% up, 2%, 3% down, 2%, 3% up. We're going to see little spikes out through the year. Overall, we're going to see the 2023 kind of balance out. I know there was an article indicating that there's going to be a spike in the third quarter from
Deloitte.
Deloitte. Okay, yep. Deloitte. And obviously, I don't use Deloitte. I use a different accounting firm. But anyway, they indicated that they expect a spike or increase in the third quarter. I believe that. That's late summer, you know, September. There are people looking, but I do feel that throughout the up until then, we're going to find that the market is going to be up and just float around the same numbers up and down.
But what's interesting in this is that, yeah, the average price came down in March from February, but it's still up in both Hamilton and Niagara from January.
Absolutely. And absolutely. And you're going to see that number float around there. Like in February, March, like so January is five, like I said, 586. This is in Niagara benchmark, 634 in February, 625 in March. It may go up. I think it's going to go up either April or May. You're going to see another spike happening. Now, I normally know that when February hits, that's usually the big mark. But the market this year is different, and I truly feel that it doesn't matter when you buy this year. It's just going to float around whatever within 2-3% of month over month. Like, you know what I mean? It'll be up, be up, down. But it's just going to float around the same number all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, we've got to keep an eye on that, obviously. But if you have questions, call the Golfie team and they'll be able to answer some of those questions, because you've been pretty darn close in your predictions for the past little while. I got to talk to you about my hockey pool this year, because your predictions are doing well for real estate. Maybe you can help me out with my fantasy pool, because I'm doing horribly.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to talk to my son, because I don't know any of that. But the one thing I want to say is that the difference between myself and my team is that we are in the trenches. We have our fingers on the pulse. Like Deloitte and other, you know, RBC, all the banks and everything, they get that information after the month is over. I get it. I'm in the trenches. I know what the people are saying, the consumer's saying. I know where the market's going. I know that. And so they're just going, you know what? You get some guy with, you know, numbers, he gets it on his desk, he'll go, oh yeah, this is what's happening. But I'm in there, in the trenches. I'm feeling, I'm talking to the people. I know what's going on as it's happening. I don't need to wait till after the month is over to look at the numbers. I know what's happening with the numbers as we're doing it. Like, and I knew the last week of January was a busy, things were changing. Things were starting to pick up again. And then it lasted right through February, and then March, it was a little bit in the beginning of March, and then it settled down. Things just quietened up in after the middle of March. And
so if you're sitting on a home and you're thinking, I want to sell, but Rob said, you know, February was the time to sell, maybe I missed the boat. What do you say to them?
There'll be other times. You just got to price it right. You'll get some. We priced this one house at my suggested price was at $1 million to put this house up for sale. We ended up listing it at $1.05 million. I did get two offers on it. Now, it's probably going to sell around $1 million. It's hard to tell. But we did get two offers on it. I'm working with it this weekend. If you price it right, you will do very well on your home, and you will never under list your house. Always remember that, no matter what the market's like. You know, if your house is worth 900 and you list it at 850, you'll get 900. You may get maybe 925 for it or whatever. But if it's worth 900, put it at 900 or put it under, but do not put it at $1 million, because then you're going to sit. And then you're going to have to reduce it, and then you're going to get under what the actual real value is, because now you ended up chasing the market.
Hence the importance of an agent who knows what they're doing. Listen, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, I know over the pandemic, there was a time when people who owned waterfront cottages were just making out like bandits. If anybody wanted one and you had one to sell, boy, could you make money. But is now the time to buy one? We'll come back with Rob Golfy right after this. It's the Golfy Real Estate Show. I'm Tim Dennis, but Rob Golfy is here from RE/MAX Escarpment, the Golfy team. And we've been talking about all things real estate. During the pandemic, there was a big move to, you know, staying in the country, staying close to home, staycations, or at least staying within the province. And so everybody wanted a cottage, and waterfront cottages saw their worth go way up. But there's a new report that said this might be the year to buy these kind of properties. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was even more so in November, December. But this, I truly feel this year will be a good year for people that are looking to buy in cottage country, because we're going to have a little bit of a changeover in ownership with people. So obviously, there's the aging population, and the next generation is inheriting the properties. So either if they can't get along to own it, they end up selling it. There's another group of people, especially the people during the pandemic, they're now are being called to work, go back to the office. And they were using their cottage country address as their primary residence because you could work anywhere in Canada where you wanted to because you were working out of your house. But now a lot of companies are requesting to come back. And so those people are going to be selling. Now, I do think a big part of it is also interest rates. When you have, a cottage and you got a mortgage on it, and the interest rates are affecting the household income, because if you have a mortgage on your house, you got another mortgage on another house. It gets expensive to own these cottages, and you're paying taxes, you're paying maintenance, you're paying mortgage and everything else. So I think you're going to see a lot of people saying, you know what, we don't use the cottage as much as we thought we would, and we need to get rid of it. And a lot of people, their intentions are to use the cottage and have it, but it's probably a lot cheaper for them to rent a cottage maybe three times in a year versus owning one and then just do it that way. But you will see a lot of cottages probably going up for sale this year because of the fact of all these different scenarios that are happening in up north.
Is there a huge difference in price if you are on the water as opposed to, I can see the water across the street or down the street? If you're on the water, big change in price?
Absolutely. Everybody wants waterfront, but what happens is a lot of first-time cottagers, if there's access, like in the street or whatever, or the laneway, they have access to water, they'll go buy that first and then eventually move up to a waterfront property because maybe it's too expensive for them right now. But yes, waterfront, always want the first thing that people want. They want to be on the water. And if they can't afford that, they'll live someplace where they have access to water and eventually move and buy one that is on the water. It's just like a secondary residence. I mean, that's everything's twice as much. You got your residence at home, you got your residence at the cottage. And it's usually the young cottagers that are the ones that are probably going to sell or whatever. It depends on their income and everything else like that. Now, you've got the retired people. They got both cottage and house paid for. They made a lot of money in their life. It's nothing for them to afford both. Or they don't use it as much and they're selling it. But there is, again, when things get tough, usually the luxury things end up getting unloaded, like the boats, the RVs, the cottages. All those things end up getting sold first, start seeing that.
Is it the same here for waterfront cottage on Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, as opposed to being up in Muskoka or on Lake Simcoe or something?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got one we just listed in Polk Coburn Fire Lane. Five or something like that. Beautiful cottage right on the water, and it's got a secondary a house on there, so you can actually have family come over. They have their own private quarters and thing like that, we're just listing it up for $2 million. Beautiful on the water, with beachfront, gorgeous. I'm expected to I think we'll get that one sold fairly quick for pretty full price. But again, you know, I think I would rather go towards Niagara for cottage than up north because of that traffic. That's a heavy traffic. Anything more than 2 hours for me is too much for me.
Yeah, and besides, for me, that kind of traffic puts me in a bad mood, which kind of defeats the purpose of relaxing for the weekend. So
yeah,
especially
you
when you know
helicopter.
Yeah,
you got a helicopter, don't you?
Oh no, I haven't used that in years. Let's move to another situation, which has been in the news a lot. It was in the news a little while ago when the government instituted this foreign buyers ban, but the budget this week made some amendments in the foreign buyers ban. So what does this mean? What's changed here, Rob?
Can you believe this? They put this thing out and they must have had a huge backlash of this, you know, introducing, and that's why they're putting this amendment into for foreign buyers. So what they're saying is the maximum amount of Canadian control in real estate investment trust subject to foreign buyer ban has been increased from 3% to 10%. So non-Canadians now can purchase vacant land. So before you couldn't. So you can buy 100 acres, that's development land, no problem. If you're a foreign buyer, no problem. And if you're going to develop it eventually. Or you can buy one lot and you can build a house on it.
As long as it's for residential, right?
As long as it's for residential. Okay. Now, they're saying that people with work permit holders are now allowed to purchase residential properties if they have 183 days or more remaining on their permit and have not purchased one already. So, like, they should just scrap this whole thing because it didn't make a difference at all in Canada for this foreign buyers. Like, it didn't. I don't think it made a difference at all. So now they're backpedaling. Now it like over here. Here's a point. It says the foreign buyer ban may not do much to address the nationwide issue of housing affordability. It's not going to change it. You know what I mean? Like, they tried to get rid of these foreign people to buy houses because they wanted to make it more affordable. But they're realizing it's not going to change. It's not going to make a difference in average or benchmark price. So basically some people believe that the ban is nothing more than a performative political gesture. So, you know what?
Do you think it made any difference in a place like, not that it affects us, but did it make it have any kind of an effect in places like Vancouver, where foreign ownership was a huge issue because there were people fleeing Hong Kong and fleeing China, buying up all kinds of land, letting it sit empty, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the kinds of things they aimed it at, but they just seemed to, instead of taking a targeted approach, they just kind of did this wide range foreign buyers ban, which then affected everybody.
Yes. And what happened was, like in Vancouver, there is subdivisions that you drive through. It's like a ghost town.
Yep.
Like brand new houses. And the foreign people that would buy these houses, they didn't want to deal with landlord tenant issues. They say, listen, I'm going to keep it empty. I bought it. This is my investment. Leave me alone. I don't want to rent it out. So they started bringing in vacant tax. And so that's what they're trying to hold back from. Hey, listen, you're going to buy a property. You got to rent it out. If not, you're going to pay a vacant tax, which I understand. I understand they want to do that because there's neighborhoods that are ghost towns. Can you imagine being a person driving around? You see a beautiful house, and the neighborhood's beautiful, but nothing's been touched. Like, I mean, landscapers are all cutting the grass. No cars in the driveway. You move in, and then you have your little kids out in the driveway. Say, hey, go see if there's any other kids in the neighborhood, and there's nobody. I mean, that's a tough one to take. So hopefully the real estate agent wouldn't sell them a house in that neighborhood. But I think, yes, they should have targeted different areas instead of doing it right across the board across Canada. And that's why they're doing the amendment with this foreign tax ban. So they had to change it because it was affecting a lot of people that it shouldn't have affected.
The other big story that was in the news when it comes to real estate over the past few weeks has been, again, paying close attention to interest rates. Bank of Canada this time around said, we're going to hold steady. We're not going to go up for the first time in a long, long time. And now your friends at Deloitte say, well, maybe those rates are going to start coming down again, which do you think will have a beneficial effect or a detrimental effect on the real estate market? Will that bring mortgage rates down? What do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to see a lot of buyers come back into the marketplace. You're going to start seeing people lock in their mortgages, 3-5 year mortgages, lock in because they don't want to get stuck again. And I always say, do not sell your house if your mortgage is coming up. You know, just stick it out, find a way, increase the amortization. This will just be a short term thing. And if it does come down next year, fantastic. You'll be fine, but do not sell your house because once you're out of the market, it's hard to get back in, and you work so hard to get it into that market. So please don't get out. But yeah, I do see that that the market's going to pick up, especially next year when interest rates are going to start climbing down. And believe me, it affects everybody. Everybody's been affected, especially investors. They're the ones that take a big beating on this because a lot of investors own several properties, and it's not just one property. It's several properties that they have interest rate issues, that their rent is not covering their mortgage or their expenses on the property. But I do feel next year there will be more activity. Housing prices will still climb. How much? I don't know. But like I said, I remember in 2017 when housing prices jumped and soared in the first quarter and all of 2016. People thought they overpaid. But guess what? I would be happy to buy a house in 2017, especially now. So again, buy something now. 5 years from now, you're going to look at it and say, wow, I'm glad I did buy it. Even though you think you bought in a high market, it doesn't matter. Just, you know what I mean? Everybody needs a house over their, a roof over their head. So it's a commodity that every person needs in this world. And
if the predictions are right and the Bank of Canada does start lowering the rates and the mortgage rates begin to come down, what does that automatically do to house prices? Because if you see in the headlines, the Bank of Canada has dropped the interest rate by blah, 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 and then, you know, BMO and CIBC and everybody come in and cut their interest rates on mortgages, what will that do to prices, Rob?
It's going to go up. Yeah, it's going to increase. And the thing is, a lot of developers right now, they're not building. So there's going to be a huge constipation happening right now of people wanting to buy, and all of a sudden, boom, it's just going to explode because there is no product available on the market. A lot of developers and builders, nobody's jumping at buying houses, especially new homes. And people, you know, and now these builders, they have these clauses in there and saying, hey, listen, if construction material goes up, you're going to have to pay more, and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not interested in doing that. I want to know exactly what my price is now. If I take possession 6 months from now, that's the price we agreed upon, or a year from now. I don't want to find out that in a year from now that the price is going to be a lot more than what we agreed upon. And also, interest rates can change in a year. So more people now are opt to buying something within 90 days. They buy it today, they move in within 90 days because they know what their interest rate's gonna be at. So, and usually banks hold your interest rate, I think 90 to 120 days. So if you walk into a bank right now or mortgage broker, say, listen, I'm buying a house. They'll say, okay, we can lock you in at this interest rate for the next 120 days, or if it comes lower, you'll get the lower rate, but we protect you from it going to a higher rate. So it's perfect for somebody that's looking for something now. So a lot of these smaller builders that I know out there, I tell them, build it if they can financially. Build the house, put it up for sale that you know that somebody can buy it and move in 90 days, 120 days. But if you're waiting for someone to buy something on paper and build it, that's 6 to 9 months later, maybe more. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's people want to know exactly what they're getting and want to know exactly what the interest rate's going to be, and that's the way. But I do feel there is going to be another little bit of explosion next year because we didn't increase our inventory of housing out there because everybody's kind of holding back and waiting.
You're listening to the Golfy Real Estate Show. He's Rob Golfy with RE/MAX, the Golfy team. I'm Tim Dennis. We're going to take a quick break here, then come right back, and we're going to talk robots and mansions and ashes. see how we put all that together when we come right back. This week, the Golfy Real Estate Show is talking about all kinds of different things when it comes to the real estate business. But as every week, Rob Golfy from REMAX Escarpment, the Golfy team, is with us to talk about the issues across the Niagara region when it comes to real estate. Now, this is a subject I didn't know we'd ever be talking about when we started having these conversations quite some time ago. The construction has a labor shortage. We know that. And it's, you know, cut back on the amount of homes that are able to be built. Some people are predicting that with all of the advances in technology, that the construction labor shortage could be addressed, possibly, by robots. Now, did you ever think you'd be talking about robots and real estate, Rob?
I know. So, did you see that video that I sent you?
Yep.
These robots, they can run. They can go up the stairs, down the stairs. They do inversion twirls. They could do backflips and land perfectly on their feet. They are not that far off to doing construction work. They're already showing things that they can do. The robot I'm talking about is a robot that looks like something you would see from Star Wars. Like literally like a person standing, like it's just electronic person. Now, I do, and they're showing how they can do construction, these robots. Now, what are the benefits? Well, I'm going to tell you something. It's hard to, there is a labor shortage. And so these robots, they don't need a union. They're a cheaper alternative for companies. Now, they can work 24 hours a day. They don't need any health benefits. No shift changeovers, no bathroom breaks, no smoke breaks, and no back talk from the employees. So these robots are going to end up doing a lot of things. Like robots started way back when manufacturers of automakers were bringing them in, and they did eliminate a lot of jobs in the auto industry. Right?
Yep.
You know, because they had these robots, you just needed one person to manage it, and then the robot does everything. This will be the same way. And so there's going to be a little bit of a transition. I think they're probably between 5 and 10 years away of actually, you're going to see construction companies have half a dozen robots working with them full time. They're not going to be cheap, but the investment will be worth it. They're going to be working on different sites. You're going to see it. They're going to be putting drywall up and drilling the nails into the drywall and doing all that kind of stuff. There still will be people. You still need that. But I'm going to tell you, it's going to eliminate a lot of it's not going to eliminate labor, because there is no labor. There's a shortage of labor. So they need to create labor. So they're going to create robots to offset that. And
the thing with this story is that, you know, as fast as we think that these things may show up, they usually end up happening faster. A lot of the technology that we, you know, predicted 10 years ago happened 5 years after the fact. So this could come sooner than you think.
Oh, absolutely. And if you look at that video, they're saying that they can lay 3,000 bricks a day versus 1,000 with manpower. So they could do three times the amount of work versus with a robot, and like that continuously works. Like robots don't need breaks. The only time that robot's going to get a break is when the guy that's operating or whatever he's doing, he needs the break. But otherwise, that robot can go 24/7, 7 days a week, and they'll be able to get more production out of it, and they'll be able to go on track. I'll tell you right now, builders do not have the manpower to build homes that this country needs. And there's a shortage of labor out there. Like, you've got all these builders in the Hamilton, Niagara region, and all these contractors, they work for pretty well all the builders. And so they're going to work, like, there's only so much can go around. And so I remember this one builder developer told me, he goes, they opened up a site. And this was before the pandemic. He says, Rob, he goes, we opened up the site. We had to stop it because we can't build what the demand is out there. We cannot. We don't have the manpower to build. So can you imagine? That's one big builder. Can you imagine all the builders in Ontario or in Canada? They're probably going through the same thing. So they need to get more people or like tradespeople or create robots. and it's going to be one way or the other, but something's got to change.
Let's move ahead to, I don't know how much of your business deals with people buying homes that are worth over $5 million, but this is kind of an interesting story about the mansion tax, because we can all dream of those huge houses that we're going to move into one day. But talk to me about the mansion tax. What is this?
Oh, yeah. California, man, they're getting a lot of bad press. People are exiting California. So the state of California put a tax starting actually April 1st, a 4% tax on property sales above $5 million. And in rising to 5.5% on sales above $10 million. I mean, we don't get that much out in Niagara-Hamilton. But so a $5 million sale would include a $200,000 tax. So I could imagine on March 30th, the last week of March, this past week, I could imagine that everybody's trying to make that closing date so they don't have to pay that tax. And a $10 million sale would include a $550,000 tax, which is typically paid by the seller. So I don't know. I mean, right now, if you're buying a luxury car, in Ontario, or anything over 100,000, you're paying a 10% tax above that. So I don't doubt that they'll bring this into Canada or in Ontario. And I mean, I don't think we have to worry about it in our area, but I think the mansion tax will be probably $2 million or $3 million, not $4 or $5 million. It's or $10 million. It's going to start probably at a $2.5 million and above. And I think they're going to bring it, and we're going to see how it goes in California. I think a lot of people are upset. A lot of wealthy people are in California. You got, you know, producers, movie stars. You got everybody out there. I think it's just you know,
sell it though is to tell people that the extra money you're bringing in is going to go to homelessness, right?
Well, if it does,
yeah, and that's, you know what I mean? The problem.
And that's the thing. Sometimes they do collect it, and then 5 years later say, okay, we got this piggy bank, let's do something with this homeless, and they only throw maybe some money into it. The intention and the publicity and everything else is about that, but it becomes something different. And you know how politicians are, you know, they say one thing and they do another. But I do feel that it's going to hurt the state of California. And people are already leaving. People are leaving there to go to Texas, and they're going to Florida. And you hear Kevin O'Leary talking about California is a place you would never invest any money in, never. So they're putting this tax on wealthy people, and you know what? You're gonna, I don't know. Like, I mean, it just depends on what you want. And wealthy people may pay it or may leave.
Or they may find a way to leave, right? Exactly.
And find a way to leave, yeah. But it's, they just keep crunching at everybody. And they did that with the cars, the luxury cars now. You'd think a lot of people, they're watching what they buy. Like if somebody's looking, oh, that car's $110,000, well, can you make it $100,000? And then so I don't have to pay that luxury tax, you know? So it's just... They keep nipping at trying to get more and more money. It's just because the problem is the government doesn't know how to manage money. They don't. That's the problem. All governments don't know how to manage money. And guess what? It's costing us as the consumer that we have to pay for it.
Let's talk about an issue which, on the surface of it, you wonder what has this got to do with real estate? But it's an interesting one because. We all, you know, anybody who owns a home has some private property, and we all know that the old adage, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Cremation has become incredibly popular in North America as a way of dealing with our final resting place, and people are a little confused as to what the rules are for scattering one's ashes, whether it's in a public place or on your own property, for that matter. The legalities of this are probably different than what you think, aren't they, Rob?
It is. So the City of Toronto, scattering funeral ashes on city land or in Lake Ontario is legal. I guess they say it's legal. And no city permission is required. The same goes for provincial land, like lakes, provincial parks, and conservation reserves, so long as it's unoccupied and there is no sign prohibiting scattering. Last year, City of Toronto identified Etobicoke, the Prince of Wales Park, along the shoreline of Lake Ontario as a recommended site for the dispersal of scattering of funeral ashes. So they're designating an area for dispersing ashes. So you know what they're saying? They're saying 75% of people in Canada are not putting people in into burials, like into like cemeteries.
They're opting for cremation, or
opting for cremation.
Yep.
It's because it's becoming so expensive to do that. Like, and people are saying, you know what? Why am I going to spend $30,000-$40,000, you know, burying my spouse or my whoever, and just going to nowhere? Like, I mean, so they just, you know, like, I mean, like, life is so expensive as it is now. They say, oh, well, I'd rather keep that money for myself versus, you know.
It's funny because I thought, up until we talked about this today, I thought that it was illegal to scatter ashes in a public place because of, I don't know, safety issues, because of toxicity issues. But I guess they're finding out that cremated remains are pretty sterile, so it's safe.
It is. The only thing you just got to worry about, like if you see a guy like me walking in your backyard and you see me throwing ashes and you think I'm fertilizing your lawn, actually I'm just...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to ask permission if you want to disperse ashes on someone's property. And I think everybody's doing it. Like, what's his name? Freddy Krueger from...
there's a role model for us.
There's a... So, is it... What was his name? No, the guy from... I'm going blank on his name today for some reason. Is the guy that... We Will Rock You, the band.
Freddie Mercury. From Queen.
From Queen, that's it.
Yep.
And
not Freddy Krueger, Rob.
No, Freddy.
Different Freddy completely. Wait,
what's his name? Freddy.
Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury, that's it. So he asked to have his ashes dispersed in a certain area, and he told his ex-wife, "Listen, I don't want to have a cemetery plot because I don't want to have it as a shrine and people going there, and wherever his ashes were dispersed was only to be known by his ex-wife." And she kept that promise, and nobody knows where she dispersed the ashes.
Right.
So, but.
But if you want to put them on your own property and your own garden and whatnot, it's legal.
It is. It is. And you know what? I can't believe the number though. It said 75% of all people who died in Canada were cremated in 2021, according to Cremation Association of North America, was collected death and cremation data. So 75% of all.
Like, pretty amazing number. It really is.
That's a high number. Yep. Like, if you did that number 30, 40 years ago, that would be like less than 10%.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know that?
It's really gone up. And a lot of it, as you say, price is a big thing. People don't want to go through the hassle, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, here we go. It's 2023. Life is different.
Exactly. So, I mean, like I said, this new generation, the next two generations, the millennials and the Generation X, I think we call it, they look at life differently. They don't want to waste money
on death, apparently.
People.
Yeah.
And they don't want to waste money on dead people.
Let's talk home value, instant home evaluations, instant home estimates. If you want a quick thumbnail sketch of how much your home is worth, where can you go for that, Rob?
Yeah, go to golfyhomevalue.com, and it doesn't work on commercial properties, but it'll give you a kind of a rough estimate of what your home is worth. And sometimes, a lot of the times, it's probably about 85%, 90% accurate, but it's always good to have us go there and meet with you. No obligation. We go there, give you an idea what your home could sell for in today's market. We give you the number based on today, not tomorrow. Like, sometimes you go in and give somebody an estimate, and then 6 months later or a year later, the house is worth more, and then they go, well, that guy said it was worth this much. Well, yeah, that was a year ago, but now it's different today. But go there, and it'll give you a general idea. There's no cost or anything. Just fill in your address, and it'll give you kind of a rough idea of the low and the high number of what your house could sell for.
And between now and when we talk again, you can always go to Rob's website at robgolfi, golfi.com, and get your answers. And until the next time, Mr. Golfi, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.